This is a Collider.com audio interview.
You guys mind if I ask Miami's questions first again?
Go ahead.
Is it more satisfying for you to have a short like Dick in the Box nominated for an Emmy, or just the whole show and the writing staff?
Oh, I think. Well, one gets to go to the big Emmys and one gets to go to the little Emmys. So it's I was thrilled for them. I thought that was great.
After all of these years, is it still a thrill when you get nominated?
Yeah. And the surprising thing about, because I've been, successful at it, but every single time you're there at the Emmys, and no matter what you were thinking, in the sense of, I have these, and I've won before, and whatever defenses you come in with, the moment they read your category, you're sweating. And just going, I can't believe it, you want it when you're there, yeah.
And there's some stiff competition this year for even in the music category. Like, there's musical episodes of Scrubs.
Right.
If it can't be SNL, who are your favorites among the competition?
Oh, I don't know. I know most of the people involved, so I'll be happy whoever wins.
Were you in charge of picking Dick in the Box to be submitted?
I don't know who submitted it. I was just happy to see it on there.
We're not as well organized as you'd think.
Good. Well,
yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks.
So how did you guys come... How did the project originate, at work? Or how did you guys all come to it?
I can start. Yeah. I came to it with Will Ferrell and Jimmy Miller came in with... a writer they liked named Pam Brady, who worked on South Park, and who I liked immediately, and they wanted to do the picture for Will, and it got written, and at the time I think Paramount was soft on making Will Ferrell pictures. We'd made two or three of them, but I think they just, for whatever reason, weren't 100% on it. So it didn't happen at that moment, and then by the time they were eager for it, that wasn't what Will wanted to do anymore. And in the meantime, I'd continued to work with Pam on the script, and we got it to a place where we liked it, and the studio liked it, and there was a lot of interest from various comedy stars and directors to do it, and all of whom would have made a different kind of movie, but might well have made a good movie. And when it came down to my decision about how I wanted to do it, the only thing I got excited about on this was doing it with Akiva and with Andy. And Andy had read the script and really liked it. And then it was not as hard with the studios as it should have been, because it's a first-time director and a first-time movie star. So it was, and it's an expensive movie. I mean, in the sense that it's got stunts, and I mean, as movies go, it's not expensive. But in that world, it was expensive. And they said, "Well, if that's where what you want to do," and so pulling the cast together, and we got lucky on a lot of things, and then the experience of making it was just great. We were in Vancouver, and there was. The team on the picture, aside from the people that we brought, were like Nick Powell, who was the stunt coordinator, who's done Gladiator and Born Identity, and so you have that, and Andrew Dunn, who was the cinematographer. It was like the A team. So if Akiva said, how would we do this, or there was like really interesting solutions to things, and it was all in service of what is essentially a big dumb comedy.
Well, how involved are you on a day-to-day basis with it? I mean, are you constantly flying back and forth from New York to Vancouver?
I was there two or three, I think three times. I sort of keep an eye on it. Being a producer on a movie set is, watching paint dry. It's just, it's really good for morale. You want to show people that you're engaged, and but if you've done your work properly, and the script is right, and the cast is right, and the director knows what he's doing, then I think it's just a straight supporting role, and you come back into it in post, you know? I mean, it has to stay on schedule and those kind of things.
What about creative input? I mean, do you make any suggestions as to...
Yeah. You know, when we were doing Wayne's World, literally we were writing it the night before. We'd be writing scenes in my office at Paramount. We were shooting on the lot, so it was that. And that was just the way we're used to it at the show. I think in this one, because it's so much more elaborate, you know, stunts and the physical comedy, I think there was a lot more planning went into things. But still, it was still improv. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the stunts, Akiva, you know, going from small screen directing to big screen directing is a big deal, just with the comedy, but it's something you know. The stunts is a whole different world. I mean, how did you sort of approach that?
When he had us read that script for the first time, that was the one thing that made me nervous, because everything else in it was kind of comedy based. So I was like, yeah, sure, I know how to do that, I know how to do that. And then I'd read some stunt and I'd go, I don't even know where to begin on that. But like he just said, this guy Nick Powell that we kind of lucked out, and I knew how I wanted to look in my head, so I could describe the shot I was going to do. I could describe like kind of how I wanted the crash to feel, how I wanted to feel kind of homemade, and like you just caught it and not cut to the close up of the crash in a way that like some comedies would do. And then a few days later, he would kind of have it all set up, mocked up with the real people with wires in like a gravel parking lot. And he'd like call me out there. And I'd go out and he'd be like, all right, you ready? You watching? I'd be like, yeah. And he'd be like, go ahead. And all of a sudden, some dude would just, you know, swing in or explode or just, you know, ride in and do it. And he'd like turn to me and I'd be like, yeah, that'll work.
Were there any stunts you wanted to do you weren't able to get in the movie?
No, he really figured it all out. There were some where I'd tell him, and you could see his face kind of drop. And he'd be, it's a lot harder to have somebody, you know, if it was just somebody making a jump, then that's pretty safe, because someone who makes a jump remains safe. But somebody who's supposed to go full speed into something, it's hard to it's hard to fake that, actually, because no matter what, to do it, somebody, unless you're doing CG, which I didn't want really any of in the movie, I had to compromise a few times for people's safety. But in general, there's very little CG, and so to do it, you got to... I was surprised how much the guys just really had to do it. They had to just be willing to kind of hurt themselves.
Yeah, like the Roadrunner, you know, like there's really 7 or 8 of those Roadrunners. Not just one. Yeah.
Can you talk about the casting of Danny McBride?
Sure.
Yeah. One of the other producers on the movie who works for him, Jill Messick, had went to Sundance and had seen his movie Foot Fist Away, which I think McCann Farrell actually just picked up for a little distribution. But so she actually brought a DVD in one day of it and was just like, guys, I think you probably want to see this. There wasn't even necessarily the right role for him in the movie. She was just like, I bet you after seeing this, you're going to want to think of somebody that you can kind of tweak to make for him. And that's really exactly what happened. We watched that thing and we weren't even as quick to think of it as she was. Like, we watched it and went, well, he's awesome, but I don't know where it fits. And then as the months went by at pre-production, we were just sitting there and we couldn't get the movie out of our heads. And so we were like, well, let's just see. If we tweak this one guy a little bit, let's have him come out here. He's in Virginia. We're like, let's fly him out here, have him do a little table read and get to kind of feel him out. And as soon as we were hanging out with him, we were just like, oh, he has to be in this movie. He has to be in there. And
he and Bill, at that I think, met at that first table read.
Yeah.
And was an instant bonding.
Best buddies,
You know, and they were inseparable there. And they're off in Hawaii now.
Well, they're in the next room right now.
Yeah, they're in the next room. They came in from Hawaii, and they'll be going back to Hawaii
for Tropic Thunder. So they've been cast as a... I don't know how many scenes they have, but they've both been put in the same movie again.
Lauren, you're obviously putting a lot of money into this, a lot of spending going on.
Yeah.
What is it about Yorma and Akiva and Annie that gives you so much confidence to...
I wouldn't go that far. I think it's this idea... done that way, you know, like, I think when you're choosing a director, what you want, because it's all about choices, there's just the sheer physical, you know, task of it, which is a grind, and so you want to make sure they have a physical, but you want to know that the choices and that the intelligence behind it is one you want to work with, and because there's a million choices along the way, and if it's not all of a piece, if it's not all the same sensibility and taste, then the picture ends up being that kind of doesn't know what it is kind of movie. So what I thought was, if we make a good one of those, I think there'll be an audience for it, and that was sort of the bet, was make a good one of those. And I think it was Akiva and Andy, obviously. And I think we knew... I think we sort of knew Bill would be in it. And then we were talking about who'd play Frank, and there were a couple names came up, and then Ian McShane's name came up. I think from Akiva.
We were huge fans of Deadwood. And as soon as we read that script, we were like, who would be the cool new person that hasn't really been in a silly comedy yet? And we didn't know if he would read the script and be like, of course not, or be game at all. We just knew we loved him and were fans. And actually, I didn't even know they had sent him the script. And then he called me in my office at Rockefeller, you know, from his office, so 50 feet away, called one day while we were working on the show. And was just like, Ian read it, he's in. And we never even met him yet. We were just like, oh my God, awesome.
And then, I mean, I talked to him on the phone, and I think he knew, again, you know, it's like Brian Dennehy and Tommy Boy or lots of, you know, I think they don't get asked to be in comedies, and then when they do, my experience on the show is like, whether it's Christopher Walken or Alec Baldwin or lots of people who are essentially known as serious actors, when they get to do comedy, they're very happy for the, and they have that... All those years, De Niro being one of the great examples, you know, all those years of casting, being cast one way, and then suddenly they're funny, and it's disarming.
Lauren, speaking of SNL, uh-huh. You announced LeBron is going to be hosting.
Yeah, for a show, yeah.
And do you have any other casting, any other people you guys are gunning for this season already?
Seth Rogen's doing the second show. And I can't think past October right now, but I think by the time we go on the air, I think we'll have the first 8 or 9 set. I never like to get too full because the decisions you make in the summer aren't necessarily the ones that you're going to feel good about in the winter. So you know, you go, well, whose music were you listening to over the summer? I think it's going to be Amy Winehouse on that first show. And you go, there are lots of people with albums coming up, but you go, how does that sound like it's 2007? And that's, you know, and so I think then we're in an election year, and so that is traditionally really good for us, and you want to leave a little space for that, and then there's the unknown, you know.
And what can we look forward to on 30 Rock this season, besides Jerry Seinfeld being in the premiere?
On the first one, yeah. I think that show, you know, was born with a lot of severe, you know, a lot of strikes against it, you know, because there was a feeding frenzy about the Sorkin show, and we were the also doing a backstage show about a late night comedy show is Tina Fey. And I think Alec from the beginning knew that this was the right show to be on. And I think we were on Tuesdays, we were on Wednesdays, we finally got to Thursdays, and gradually you could just see that it got better and better, and they're trusting the characters more and more. And I think it will be, as I say, although it's a comedy comedy phrase, but I think it will be less dense. You know, there will not. I think when the first year of a show, you're trying to do everything you ever thought of, and put everything that's brilliant in one thing. And I think the more confident you get, the more easy you get with it. It just relaxes and takes on another. And I think, from what I know from the stories so far, I think it will jump to another level. And I think this will be the year that it becomes a popular hit.
Are you developing other shows right now?
I wish I were better organized, but I think, you know, it's too hard a process to not go in. I always go into it in the same way, but there's not much difference between making Hot Rod or making this, is that Tina Fey is at the center of that show, creative center of that show, and I know the choices she'll make and her taste. While I won't always be in agreement, I know that it's coming from a place of intelligence and that it wants it to be good, or what the phrase I use is hits with honor, you know. And it's they know it has to be a hit, because you don't get to make another one if it's not a hit. But you also have to do it with some with honor, so that it's, you know, you can be really proud of it.
Lauren, Two-parter. You recently put out that amazing first season SNL DVD.
Right, yeah.
Is there going to be a second season?
Yeah, that's coming out soon. And then I think third, and then there's only another 30 left.
I just didn't know if it sold enough to do, because it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing to watch, because it's interesting to see the show, the evolution of the show, from this sort of scrappy guerrilla program to what it is now. But I'm curious, now that the show is this institution, you have the cast who have never lived in a world without SNL.
Right.
Is it tough to recruit sort of the edgier, newer people, because you've gone from being the underdog to being the institution? Does it make it tough?
I think... probably yes is the answer, I think, but at the same time, they tend to find us. So, you know, in the sense that Chris Farley was the child that Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi never had, you get, or Andy watching, you know, the, Adam Sandler or Dana or that world, every generation grows up on their cast, and, so there's some echoes, but I never put anyone in that I think is like somebody we've ever had before. But it's almost always chemistry of, like, this cast this year, although some of them had been there for a while and some were brand new, it just all just connected. It was just one of those great seasons where everybody was good, you're happy, when you look around the room between dress and air, and there wasn't any that, there was just a they were all there for each other, and it was just no different than the first season.
We have time for one more question.
Now I should ask one.
Scorpio.
It's a two-parter. When you this, Andy kind of touched on this question earlier, but since you have obviously a lot more writing on it, I think, are you intimidated a little bit by the fact that this movie's kind of being released and like alongside The Simpsons and alongside Superbad at the same time?
I think the idea was that if we came on in the summer, that there would just be a longer time for people out of school and people would find the picture. I have complete faith in the picture, and obviously we don't have the established franchise that The Simpsons has, and I think Superbad, from what everything I hear, is great. So, but I think I'm real happy with the movie, and I just have a feeling that it's going to work. But we'll see.
Thank you.